Hello, I'm Jillian. Welcome to Be Bold, Live Free, a podcast for women whose lives are affected by the traumatic fallout of toxic treatment in a close relationship. On this podcast, you will be inspired by survivors, women of faith who share their journeys of recovery. You will hear from experts who answer your unasked questions, share resources, and the steps you can take toward freedom, healing, and restoration. We're back for episode 2 of Be Bold, Live Free with my very special guest, Anna LeBaron. If you didn't hear the first part of our conversation, be sure to listen to episode 1 so you don't miss any of the valuable information and book recommendations shared by Anna. Also, Anna has generously offered to give away a fantastic resource to one of you after listening to this podcast who likes and leaves a review of this episode. Be sure to check the show notes for dates and details. And now, part 2 of my interview with Anna LeBaron. Hello, Anna. It's so good to have you back.
Thank you so much.
I would just love to try to pick up where we left off last time. We were talking about the fact that so many women feel shame and guilt about getting out of a marriage situation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think that taking a time out can be advised if you're not ready to think about leaving a relationship permanently. That might be easier for some people, but getting yourself physically away can oftentimes be a very important first step. There shouldn't be this kind of umbrella of guilt and shame over us if we're Christians.
Right. And
I know we touched on that a little bit last time, but I'd like to pick up there and ask you to elaborate.
There's just so many people, including myself included, who will go to the pastors and deacons and small group people. I mean, just there's so much happening and so many different denominations and churches and religious organizations that advise women to stay in a marriage where abuse is happening. And they feel like the marriage itself is more important to God than the person in the marriage.
Yes.
And that is just not the case. When Jesus healed someone on the Sabbath, he said, the Sabbath was made for us, not us for the Sabbath. And that's the same exact concept. Marriage was made for us as a benefit to us. We were not made to serve the institution of marriage. Right. And so I'm going to quote Gretchen Baskerville, just because she says it so eloquently. She wrote the book that we talked about, The Life-Saving Divorce. And she said, there's a myth surrounding divorce. And the myth says that God will heal your marriage if you pray enough. And this is the truth that she identifies. God does not promise to heal all marriages in answer to our prayers. Sometimes he answers our prayers by helping us get out of a marriage when it turns dangerous. And so there are lots of books, there's lots of resources out there, there's lots of institutions that believe in the sanctity of marriage. And I'm not in opposition to the idea of the sanctity of marriage. I believe in the sanctity of marriage when that marriage is serving the two people in the marriage, when it's serving both of them.
Yes.
That is a marriage where when it stays together and the two people can grow and experience love and care and kindness and compassion and growth and all of the beautiful things that can happen when a marriage is the kind that actually reflect the God that marriage as an institution is designed to show us. One of my mentors said that the things that we experience on this earth, being a daughter or a sister or a mother or a father or being a wife or a husband or in a marriage. Those things are pictures of what happened in the spiritual realm. We get a picture of it in the earthly realm, and it reflects something that's happening spiritually. And when there's abuse happening in a marriage, that is absolutely not a reflection of what God is wanting to show us through the marriage couple and through these experiences that we have once we become a married couple.
Right.
He's wanting to show the mystery of the kingdom through marriage. And there is nothing about that is happening when one person has all the power and control and the other person has none.
Right. And I know in Ephesians, sometimes when I have in my earlier experiences in church, the verse that addressed that wives be submissive to your husbands was so overemphasized. And the verse that said, be submissive to one another, just didn't make it to the pulpit. And
right.
All the pressure was put on the wife in that circumstance. And I was young and a very black and white person. I was very idealistic. And I just took that as my calling in life was to be submissive to my husband. And I took it too far. When I was being treated unfairly and verbally abused, and then I saw my children being verbally abused, that was time for me to do something about my situation. But I didn't understand that. I thought I had to try harder, do better, to stay out of trouble and to please my husband. And that was just a never-ending endeavor.
Yeah.
Things did not get better.
Yeah.
And like,
there's another book that really helped me. It is not written from a Christian perspective. The other two that I've mentioned do talk about all of that. But this one, not written from a Christian perspective, but written from the perspective of somebody who understands the psychology of these abuses that happen. This one is called The Betrayal Bond. And when I read that book on the recommendation of a Christian counselor that I knew, it felt like everything about my inner life was exposed.
Wow.
I thought somebody knows what's happening here. And I got to the point to where I was telling my very closest friend of like almost 40 years now, but at the time it was probably 35 years. I got to the point where I was telling my friend about this book, that it was so good. And I just finished reading it, highlighted, underlined so much. And my friend asked to borrow it and to read it. And every other book I've ever read that I loved, and I've read a lot, I love reading. I've always just gleefully put in her hands and said, yes, read it. And this one, because I had highlighted so much and written in the margins so much and underlined so much, I took this one and like really pulled it in close and was thinking of reasons why I shouldn't let her borrow it. Because I thought if she reads this book with all my highlighting and underlining and notes that I took, she's going to know too much. And this is my very best friend of 35 years.
Wow.
And I felt so exposed and so raw. And it was the most helpful book at the time. Now, these other two books that we've talked about in the previous episode and this one, those are recently released books.
Right.
This one was 5 years ago that was so helpful to me and helped me to identify what was happening and helped me create a plan to get out in a way that I was able to get out and stay out.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing you tell us, Anna, is you weren't sharing intimate details about your life with your best friend.
I didn't know how, because it's too embarrassing.
Yes.
It's too shameful to admit that you've gotten yourself into this situation.
Yes.
And so
I identify that, with that.
Just that is one way of I allowed myself to be isolated because I was too ashamed to admit that this person that I thought was going to be my Boaz and my forever and my last, first, everything turned out to not be that person.
Right. That is really hard.
So here's the concept that I learned from another friend. Do you see a pattern here where I have mentors, I have counselors, I have friends that I'm talking to who are speaking wisdom into my life, and that I'm taking those things and learning from them and growing and creating the life that I have now?
Yes.
And it didn't all happen at once. So if any of your listeners are thinking, this is brand new to me, all of this is new, these ideas are new, then know that this is step one. This is step one for you. Some of them may be thinking, yeah, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I've been doing this and this and this to prepare for extricating myself. This might not be step one. This might be just a way of confirming the things that you've already decided.
Right. And for some of our listeners, they have extricated themselves or been left or whatever, but they're still suffering the effects of what is really abuse and feeling guilty and shameful.
Right. And so for them, I would talk about the book Healing from Hidden Abuse by Shannon Thomas.
Yes.
Like, there are resources for every step along the way. And so I was saying earlier that a concept that I learned from another friend of mine, it's actually a business term used for people who are investors. And it's called an escalation of commitment. And the thing that happens is you make an investment, and then as it grows or becomes, you know, does well, you invest more, and then you invest more. And then the longer you're holding that investment, the more invested you are. And what happens is when the investment starts to lose value, many people will hold and hold and hold, hoping that it will turn around, and then that investment will give them a return one
right.
day.
Right.
And when you're in an abusive relationship and you've experienced that pattern over and over and over and over, the same pattern that repeats itself, the same fights, the same arguments, and they've been happening over and over and over, you can know that the odds of that turnaround happening are slim to none.
Right. And that brings to mind another business term, and that would be to cut your losses. Mm-hmm. And that seems kind of like a harsh thing to say when we're talking about a relationship with another person.
Right.
But for me, if I had done something earlier in my life, I would have saved my children some grief. Mm-hmm. So, and that's not to lay any guilt on anyone else. Mm-hmm. And I can't go back and change what happened in my life.
Right.
And God has really made up in the lives of my children what they didn't get from me. And I've been very blessed, and so have they, in spite of our circumstances.
Well, you can do like me, or anybody can do like me. And I have 5 children. They're all grown up now. And, you know, as parents, we know that we will fail our children in so many ways. Even if you have a 2-parent home that's loving and kind, the parents are going to fail those children in some ways because, you know, we're humans that fail our children. And so my commitment to my children was, as you know, when once you become a grown adult and you need therapy for any kind of way that I failed you, I will pay for your therapy. Like, that is me putting my money where my mouth is. And I will tell you, several of my children have taken me up on the offer.
Wow.
And the fact that they're willing at these young ages to talk to a professional counselor, just gives me so much joy.
Yes.
There's nothing I would rather pay for more than helping my children undo some of the harm or damage that was caused in their young lives because of my choices. And I was a good enough mom. That was one thing I learned from a counselor. I was a good enough mom. The very fact that you have angst in your soul about the ways that you may have harmed your children or failed them is evidence that you are also a good enough mom or a good enough dad.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you can rest assured. And here's the very encouraging part for me is my family of origin story is horrifying. We haven't even covered that here. And so if somebody didn't hear the first episode, go back and listen to it just to know what I'm talking about. My family of origin story is horrifying. Every part of it. I experienced trauma, abuse, neglect, abandonment, slave labor, not educated, all of the things that the parents are supposed to provide, they provided none of it for me. And yet God was able to reach out in the midst of that life that I was living and pull me right out and bring me along on this journey of healing that has taken decades to bring me to the place where I am now. And it took 10 years of professional counseling for me to overcome all the obstacles that were put in my way to become the person that God created me to be. And that's the encouraging part for anyone. I know now, because I've often wondered, how in the world would God allow me or anyone to be born into that family of origin that I was born in, where our lives were just one horrific experience after another? And here's what I've come to understand. I use the analogy of an apple. If you've ever eaten an apple, you can probably imagine the crunch of taking a bite and the juice and the sweetness and all of those things happening when you take a bite of an apple, right?
Right.
If I was holding an apple seed in front of you and I would say, this is an apple seed. And if you've ever experienced biting into an apple, you would know what the end result would be if that seed is taken and planted into the ground and nurtured and cared for, and over years of growth, then eventually an apple will form on the tree that you can take and it can nourish your life. Well, I was like, God says, I knit you together in your mother's womb. God needed the DNA of my father and my mother to create the person that he imagined that I would be, that he knew I would become. He knew what the fruit would be from my life when he planted the seed.
Yes.
It took a long time for that seed to grow, because seeds that are planted in really hard ground that aren't nurtured and watered don't grow very fast, and they don't grow at all sometimes. But my life, God was born in very hard soil. And once God was the one nurturing the ground and protecting it and growing it and watering it and making sure I had plenty of sun and all the care and the pruning and all of those things, eventually, with all of that care, my life is now producing fruit that nourishes the life of the people around me. If he did it for me, he can do it for my children. He can do it for you. He can do it for your children.
Yes. Yes. And amen. That's beautiful. You know, sometimes we feel less than because of our background. I hear that a lot. Women are made to believe they're not enough, that they have to be attached to someone else to have any worth.
Not enough or too much.
True.
At the same time.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that is true. And that is one of those crazy making things.
Yes, that's crazy making right there.
Yes. Yes. I first heard that term when I was working for a corporation, and I was a manager in the corporation. And I was in this manager's meeting, and what was coming out of the mouth of the CEO didn't have any relationship to the truth of what was actually happening in the company. And who was I to speak up? And so we left the meeting, and I said to one of the other managers who happened to be a young man, I said, "Am I not hearing right?" And he goes, "Oh no, you're hearing exactly right. And it's crazy making." And that's the first time I had heard that term. And so I learned as I went along in life what some of those crazy making things are. And there are several crazy making things when you're in an abusive relationship. And we don't realize it at the time.
Right. So I've offered a lot of resources, a lot of books. When you experience a lot of shame, it's difficult to let go of that cloak of shame that you just want to hide under.
Yes.
And one of my favorite authors is Brené Brown. Her book, Daring Greatly, was incredibly helpful for me to let go of that cloak of shame that I wore because of choices that other people made that created my life, a very difficult life for me, and also just my own choices. I was very ashamed. And so that book was also very helpful.
I love that book too, Anna. And I love that she points out in that book the difference between guilt and shame. Yeah. And that has stayed with me because I was made to feel shame so often in my life. And she says that guilt, we can take care of, is we did something bad. And shame is you are bad. And that's such a distinct difference that we need to understand, because God doesn't look at us as being bad.
So in the last episode, when we talked about the fact that this is, you know, could be a first step for someone just listening to this, might be their first step. For other people, they may have been thinking about these things for a while, and they're preparing themselves for some really big steps coming up. What I wanted to say that I didn't get to say last time is that there's only one time in your life when you can actually change something and create a life for yourself that you actually want to live. And that is a time that I call the immediate now. There's nothing that you can do about anything that happened 1 minute ago, 5 minutes ago, 10, yesterday, the last week, last year. You cannot go back and undo anything. And neither can you make a choice or a decision that's going to affect, like, you can't say a week from now, I'll make a decision. The only time that you actually have where you can make a choice or a decision that will affect a week from now is right now, this moment, while you're taking a breath. So take a breath with me.
Okay.
While you're taking a breath is the only time that you actually have. Nobody's guaranteed a minute from now, or 5 minutes from now, or a week from now. None of us have that guaranteed. And so when you're taking a breath is the very best time to make choices, to make decisions, even small little choices. And for some people, it might be making an appointment with a professional counselor. That one decision can change the trajectory of your life, not overnight, but in time. Calling a friend that you trust, that is a safe person, and saying, "Can we meet for coffee? I need to talk to you about some things." And then just opening your heart to a safe person and saying, "This is where I'm at." Me being willing to say, "This is what happened yesterday." That event that we talked about on the last episode, where the person looked at me and said, "Anna, that's abuse."
Right.
Just me being willing to open that up and to speak the thing out loud to someone was one of the many, many steps that I had to take to extricate myself. I read books. I followed certain authors on social media. I educated myself. I learned. I created a support system. I let people know that were outside of the four walls what was actually happening. And it was hard at first to name the thing.
That's a real breakthrough moment.
Mm-hmm. Annie Lamont, she says, I'm going to quote her loosely, share your story. If people wanted you to speak warmly about them, they should have treated you better.
Yes.
And so if people want you to not say what they're doing to you, they should not be doing those things to you.
Yes. Yes. And amen. Yeah.
And so you have permission. You have permission to speak the thing. And here's what I've learned is when it stays inside of you, it has power. The minute you speak that thing or write the thing, even if you just write in a personal journal that's kept under lock and key, once you bring it to the outside of you, either spoken or written, it's called externalizing your story. Internalized, all you ever do is see that same thing over and over with that old pair of eyes that experienced those things. As soon as you bring it out into the light, your grown adult self, the one that has gained wisdom and knowledge and understanding, even just by listening to me, you're gaining wisdom, knowledge, and understanding if what I'm saying is resonating with you. And by speaking the thing out loud, your more wise, more discerning, more understanding self can look at those experiences from a different perspective than if you keep it on the inside.
Yes.
So those things are just vital. Being able to have somebody that's a safe person to talk to.
That's so true, Anna. And just, I think of exposing it to the light and
it loses power.
It does lose power. It's like secrets lose their power when they're divulged.
Yes.
And I know I used to just pray that people wouldn't find out how many times I had been married when I moved to a new community, had a new job. And it was like something held over me. And here I am writing books about it. You know, that's what God can do.
Think about, this is just for you and anybody else, because this is just for you. Think about the woman that Jesus met at the well.
Yes, that is for me.
where he knew everything.
Yes.
He knew everything about her. How many times she'd been married, that she wasn't even married to the man she was living with then. And he knew her and went to her and found her and began a conversation with her.
Yes.
And then as she engaged in that conversation, more and more truth was revealed. Even when she tried to change the subject and obfuscate and,
right.
And let's talk about this other thing because I'm super uncomfortable with what you're saying. He stayed with her. He met her where she was at and spoke to her in ways that changed her life.
Yes, that's just such a marvelous story.
She was the first person, the first disciple of Jesus who ever changed an entire community and won them for Christ.
Yes, it's an incredible story. And I've been told that it's the longest recorded conversation in the Bible that Jesus had with one person. And that was the woman at the well.
And he wants that. The number doesn't matter.
Right.
He went to her and he found her where she was at.
Yes.
In her, doing her everyday getting water for her family.
Yes.
And he met her right there.
Right. That reminds me of, I saw a little plaque that I think of often. I've even made bookmarks and given them to some women I know. And it just said, Jesus knows me, this I love.
Yes.
And that's the truth. He loves us right where we are, and he will meet us right where we are.
I mean, think about the lost sheep.
Yes.
The one that wandered off, just followed its nose in the grass, you know, chomping on the grass and wandered off and got itself very lost. He left the 99 who were doing the right thing and over there just staying in the fold. He left them to go find the one and then brought it back. And imagine if you were the lost sheep or a little lamb, and he finds you and picks you up and puts you over his shoulders and carries you close and speaks softly and kindly and gently.
Right.
Before bringing you back to the fold and setting you down. It's just a beautiful picture of the way that Jesus rescues the ones who find themselves in a lost place.
Right.
One of my favorite authors, here we go again. I'm always with the books. one of my favorite all-time authors of all time is Dallas Willard.
Oh, yes.
He talked about spiritual formation.
Yes.
And one of my favorite quotes of his wasn't even in one of his books. It was in a recording I heard of him. He said, we are all God's toddlers. And if you imagine a little toddler, where I have a 2-year-old granddaughter, all my kids are grown. I loved being a mom. I watched over them like a hawk, you know? So granddaughter is about 2 years old now. She'll be 2 this month. And I am part of the team of people that takes care of her when her mom and dad are both at work. So I get to watch her about 2 days a week. Literally, I don't take my eyes off of that child.
Yeah.
Not because I'm afraid she's going to get herself in trouble or disobey or anything like that. It's literally everything she does is amazing to me and wonderful and adorable. Even when she gets upset and angry or cries or is frustrated, she's precious to me.
Right.
And that is a picture to me of the way God sees me. Even when I get myself into trouble, or I find myself lost, or I find myself in a jam, or I've made choices that got me into this really difficult place, he sees me just the way I see my granddaughter. I'm precious to him. And he wants to help me.
Yes.
Like my granddaughter, when it's time to put on her shoes, she does not want help. And even when she's sitting there struggling, trying to do it on herself, by herself and on her own, and doesn't want help and just, you know, moves away and doesn't want me to help her, I'm still there looking at how cute she is trying to put her shoes on by herself. And the minute she gives up and says help, I'm right there to just do the thing that's just needed to help solve the problem. And God is that same way.
About how much joy your granddaughter gives you.
Yes.
And God,
like, there's never a second that she doesn't bring me absolute joy. Just thinking about her right now is giving me absolute joy.
I understand that as a grandmother, and it's wonderful to think that God created us for companionship and communication, and that our lives give him joy.
Yes.
We bring joy to him. You know, it's kind of unfathomable for me to think about that, but I know it's true.
And part of the growth process is us saying, I want to do this. I want to make these choices. And that is something that as children grow, you want to give them autonomy, and it's healthy for them to eventually learn how to put on their own shoes and tie their own shoes and do all those things. And absolutely, God wants us to get to that place where we're grown and mature and healthy. But when you find yourself in a situation where you're experiencing abuse, you're not able to grow in the ways that he has designed you to grow. Children in abusive situations do not grow the way he designed us to grow. Does that mean that all hope is lost? No. What I have experienced as a grown adult is that my healing was something that I pursued for myself. In effect, I reparented little Anna.
Right. I love it that you brought up the woman at the well today, Anna, and that you shared so many resources with us. And I'm going to put all of those in the show notes. And maybe we can talk yet another time. It's been very encouraging to listen to what you've shared today. It's been very encouraging. And I appreciate that. And thank you so much.
Well, it's a pleasure. And thank you for having me. It's part of my healing journey to be able to talk about my experiences and share them with others in a way that brings redemption to my story. And that's something that I can hope for every single one of your listeners, the ones who are gleaning from this conversation in ways that are going to create a redemption story for themselves.
Yes, that's so important. That's a wonderful point. That's what God desires for us. Can't be more grateful to God for your redemption story, and just so grateful that you're here to share it. Thank you
so much. Thanks for having me.
Okay. See you soon.
It has truly been a blessing to hear from Anna. I love her passion for hurting women and her willingness to be so vulnerable. Be sure to check the show notes for how to enter the drawing for a resource Anna is giving away to one lucky listener who likes and leaves a review of this episode. Even if you aren't the lucky winner, you will want to know about this resource, something I wish I had had a long time ago. Goodbye for now, and God bless you.